Hello, this is Anthony Pascal.
And this is Lori Ulster.
And this is All Access Star Trek, the TrekMovie.com podcast all about the Star Trek universe on TV.
Today we're going to review the fifth episode of Star Trek Lower Decks, which is called Cupid's Errant Arrow. But first, we're going to go through some news because we had a whole lot of it in the last couple of days. All about the new shows, primarily about the new shows. So I think we should start with the Star Trek Discovery casting news, right?
Right. Yesterday, CBS announced two new actors and new characters joining the show for season three. They'd already announced David Ajala is going to play a character named Book as a major character throughout the season. The two new characters, actors are Blue DeBarrio, who's playing a character called Adira, and Ian Alexander, who's playing a Trill character called Gray.
The thing that's interesting about the Trill, well, first of all, it's the reason they were promoting these two, we should talk about, is that they are, one is transgender, which is Gray, I believe, and Adira is non-binary.
Yeah, and the CBS press release certainly, you know, made a big deal out of that, and it certainly worked. I saw this reported in the BBC and CNN, so they really got a lot of mileage out of kind of leaning into the diversity of the show. They were pushing this idea that these were firsts for the Star Trek franchise, which is true if you say first regular characters.
Right. We've certainly explored those ideas in alien species before.
Indeed. And you know, a lot of the cast came out yesterday, just heaping praise on these two young actors. They're both very young, both actors. I think they're both under 20. Is that right?
Oh, that I don't know. Interesting.
Even though, you know, Ian Alexander was in the OA, which is the show that has Jason Isaacs on Netflix, and in a very popular video game. Blue DeBarrio is has no credits at all. Blue was recruited straight out of college, I think. So, but ironically, Blue's Adira appears to have a larger role, and we actually saw Blue in, or the Adira character, in the trailer released last, what was it, October?
Yeah, it was a while ago. Yeah, at New York Comic Con.
Right. There's, you know, there was an unknown character in a Jeffries tube holding a tablet, and now we know, who that is. That's Adira. So there we go.
And we think Adira is human, but we don't know for sure. They don't specify.
I mean, it's an interesting name. Like, there's no first name. So I guess the question is it a 32nd century human or someone who came with them that just has, you know, was recently assigned to Discovery before they jumped into the future?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, look, we have people with one name. Madonna, Sting, Prince.
Right.
So we don't know. We're waiting to find out the species. We know the other one, the character Gray, is a Trill and apparently is excited about becoming joined. So that's an aspect of the Trill that we have not seen, which is an unjoined Trill.
And, well, I think we have seen unjoined Trill. Well, obviously, there was the episode with when the guy, you know, took everyone hostage on DS9.
Oh, yeah. And then the initiate. There was a whole episode about an initiate. That's true.
Yeah.
Like, as well as that one. I guess more seeing I assume we're going to see some before and after, I'm hoping.
Right. And looking back at the trailer, there's a moment where it kind of looks like one of those symbiont pools,
mm-hmm.
and there's a adult Trill character, and when you covered New York Comic Con last year, they already said we're going to the planet Trill, right?
Yep.
So the Trill clearly play a role in season 3. We just don't know how significant of a role. You know, maybe they're one of the last members of the Federation that still exists in whatever form the Federation still exists.
Right. Well, it should be interesting either way, I think, to see what they decide to do with it. If they just, you know, I don't think that Dax symbiont could last that long since they're,
well, but
they're,
you know,
very far in the future.
Well, okay. Two points. One is, why not? Two is, this is Discovery. So I think they're going to do it.
Oh, you think it'll be a Dax?
Yeah, I'm not basing this on anything. I'm just saying these guys can't help themselves. They got the Enterprise. They got Spock. come on, you're on Trill. You got a pool. You got a young person who wants to be a joined Trill. You got all the pieces there. So.
Well, if that gives us a reason to get Terry Farrell and Nicole DeBorg little guest spots, then I am all for that. If there's some kind of meeting the former hosts, you know, we've seen Dax has met her other hosts in various forms. So if there's a way to do that, I'm in. I like those two actresses.
Even if not, it's kind of an interesting nod to the past. Obviously, for season 3, they're doing everything they can to lean into the future, to be writing new canon, but I'm sure there will be some elements of the past. We'll see some planets we've heard of before, and obviously we're going to see the Trill, and I think it would be, yeah, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah, as long as they don't keep throwing, if it's Dax is going to have a lot of very specific memories that we remember also. And so it's just how they do that. Do they get gratuitous about it? Does it have a meaning? We'll find out when we get there.
Well, and Dax would be, close to 1,000 years old by that point, right? I mean, you know.
Which is, I have to say, the thing I found most interesting about Jadzia Dax was this 28-year-old woman with this 300-year-old symbiont. And so it sounds like now we're going even younger with the host and even older with the symbiont. And that creates a very interesting dynamic, even just within one person.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, getting back to Adira, the other character played by Blue DeBarrio, we do know that the character is going to be working closely with
Stamets.
Stamets, they say, an unexpected bond with Stamets and Dr. Hugh Culber. And both actors, Wilson Cruz and Anthony Rapp, are just praising both of these new actors very highly on social media yesterday. So I think they all worked very closely together. And, but we don't know what that relationship is. Maybe, you know, Adira was working in engineering or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is I saw an outpouring of excitement online from fans who feel that this is a level of representation that they've been waiting for. So amidst the haters, which there will always be some, there were so many people I saw who were just so excited to have these people be regular characters instead of just alien stories trying to maybe teach us something, that this is just going to be part of regular life on Discovery. And that's what they're happy about.
And I'm sure that just in the way that they've handled the characters of Culber and Stamets, that even though they're sending out a press release and they want, you know, and they're, you know, doing interviews with GLAAD, within the show, I don't think they're going to make a big deal out of it in universe, these things.
Right. You know, it's funny because sometimes I don't like that they give all these interviews talking about all the great things that they're doing on the show. And sometimes those things are not reflected in the show. But in this case, because we sort of had the same thing where they talked about first, you know, gay characters as main characters, and they did a great job in the show of putting them in. And the diversity on the show, while I sometimes find it excessive the way that they talk about it, I would say they handle it beautifully within the show itself, because the characters are just the characters and they are diverse, but they don't, it's just part of the fabric of life in the future on this ship. And so I think that they will do the same thing with these two new ones.
Now, speaking of getting news, CBS just announced that next week they're going to be making a big deal out of Star Trek Day. Of course, the original Star Trek debuted on September 8th, 1966, and that is Star Trek Day. So next Tuesday, we'll be celebrating the 54th anniversary. And to do that, CBS is doing something they have never done before, which is they're going to hold kind of 24 hours of various online events. The headline is a series of panels.
And they're not just for the new shows. They have a bunch for the legacy shows as well. And some of them have very specific agendas and others seem to be more broad. So in terms of the new shows, the thing that I got the most excited about was that the Strange New Worlds panel is going to have writers, plural, and cast. And it says they will discuss upcoming adventures, which means we might actually find out something more specific about this show.
And the Star Trek Discovery panel will have Sinequa and David Ajala and Alex Kurtzman and Michelle Paradise. There will be a Picard / Next Generation panel with Patrick Stewart and Jonathan Frakes, which is always a great combo. And then the whole cast, you know, all the ensigns from Lower Decks, along with Mike McMahon, are going to do Lower Decks. And then for the legacy or classic shows, there's going to be original series panel, Deep Space Nine panel with a whole bunch of people on it, and an Enterprise panel with Scott Bakula, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah. And the Deep Space Nine panel, they said specifically, they are going to discuss Far Beyond the Stars and other iconic episodes. So I think Voyager, they're mostly talking about the legacy of Voyager. But Deep Space Nine is going to be more specific. And then the original series panel is George Takei and Rod Roddenberry. And it says they're discussing the first episode of Star Trek. So I'm assuming that means the Man Trap, because that's the first aired episode that aired that day, that premiered that day. But you ask a Star Trek fan, what's the first episode? And you're going to get some different answers. Based on first production episode or The Cage, which was the pilot. So there's a lot of stuff going on in there. But I'm assuming they mean the Man Trap.
But they're promising news. They're promising first looks. So fingers crossed, this time next week, we will have seen a trailer for another trailer for Discovery Season 3. And maybe I'm going to predict now. Okay. They're going to announce season 4.
Yeah, I suspect they will. So keep checking trekmovie.com, because we will be updating the site and putting up new pieces as we get new information. But yeah, I think the announcement of season 4 is a really good bet.
The last bit of news is really just an update on something we've covered on the site and here in the pod, which is this notion of Captain Proton coming back in Short Treks. And this is something that Robbie McNeil and Garrett Wong have said they've wanted to do in the past. And they brought it up again on their podcast last week and kind of went into more detail. Lori, what did he say?
Robbie was just talking about doing a set of serialized shorts. So he was thinking like 8 or 10 minutes a piece, maybe. You do maybe a dozen of them. And then you can see it in these, and all in black and white, of course, and you'd see it in these little pieces, and he pictures it as only, it's just the holodeck, it's just Captain Proton. And he was talking about having the different characters from Voyager rotate through it, which he thought would be fun. And he was talking about it with Robert Beltran, who thought that that sounded like a lot of fun.
So it's still top of mind, and you know, Robbie is... still has some juice in Hollywood, as it were. You know, he's an executive producer. He's attached to a new Disney project. He's a director. So he's thinking this through in a way as a Hollywood producer, not just some random, like, this would be fun to do. And if you tie this into something that Kurtzman has said recently, that he wants to do some black and white in Short Treks. And then we put up an article last week
there was a bit of an interview I did with David A. Goodman, who's an executive producer on The Orville. And I interviewed him about The Orville, but I just kind of asked him about it on the side. It's like, oh, yeah, I talked to Robbie about it, and it's a great idea. So he's on board, and he's a huge Star Trek fan. He's written Star Trek books. He wrote Futurama episode. And the kind of the money quote from him was, he said, as soon as my contract with Fox is up, which could be by the end of this year, he said his first phone call he's going to make is to CBS. He wants to do this. And he wants to pitch this and some other Star Trek ideas he's got. So I'm not saying this is going to happen, but many pieces are on the board that could add up to this thing happening.
Or at least some form of it, if not a whole bunch of shorts, because obviously Short Treks wouldn't probably want to do a bunch of them. But who knows?
There's no way that Kurtzman Company would do a whole season of these, because they want to do multiple experiments. So yeah, I'm thinking at best they get one or two of these, but maybe that's enough. So we'll see.
Right. Is that something you'd want to watch?
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. I would, depending on what the conceit is, and that's one of the questions I've got is this fully in-universe? Are they all constantly in character? Or do they ever reveal themselves to be... So is Tom Paris playing Captain Proton the whole time? Or is he ever Tom Paris? So I would want to see them, as they did in the holodeck, constantly breaking the fourth wall of Captain Proton, where they would go in and out of character, as it were. I wouldn't want to see, Robbie McNeil as Tom Paris, as Captain Proton, completely in universe. I don't think that would work.
Yeah, I agree. Those were not my favorite segments of the show, for sure. I didn't like too much Captain Proton. But you're right. It was definitely more entertaining when you're more aware that it's, Captain Janeway pretending to be Queen Arachnia was entertaining.
Right. Or Seven of Nine taking down Satan's robot and being completely bored by it.
If they did that every episode, I'd be very happy.
Exactly. So let's talk about this week's episode of Lower Decks, because love is in the air on the USS Cerritos.
What did you think of this one overall?
What's interesting about this episode is that I watched it and I liked it. And then I watched it again and I loved it. And I don't know why that is.
I had the same experience. So I have a theory on why that is, which is that I think at first I just enjoyed it because I thought the pace was back up to where I like it, which is nice and fast. Action was happening quickly. The jokes were coming fast and furious, and I enjoyed that part. But in a subsequent viewing, I found the heart in it in a stronger way than I did the first time. So it made it feel a little more grounded and a little more... I mean, you always say heartwarming about this show. There was just so much more going on between the characters once I had finished enjoying the jokes and was sort of paying more attention and wasn't getting surprised by the jokes so much.
It was a romantic comedy in many ways, but in a good way, I feel. It was different in structure, and that's one of the things I liked about it. Although it took me a second to kind of get my head around that. It didn't have the opening teaser. It just jumped right into it. And it had these three parallel stories, which is different. And shows that they're willing to experiment with the format that they've established. Which is kind of risky for a show this young to play around with their own structure. But I felt like it really worked in this episode.
Yeah, I liked the ways that there were three very separate stories, and when they intersected, it was in these like drive-bys.
Right.
Like they'd just pass each other in the hallway, and then we'd pick up the other story. But it was I thought it was an interesting way to do it.
Our characters, so what they, they paired them off, right? So you got Brad and Mariner. as one pair. You have Tendi and Rutherford as another pair, and then you've got Ransom and Freeman as the last pair in our kind of three pairings. And there was only one moment where any two interacted in the whole episode. When there was a brief discussion when they go over to the USS Vancouver, and then the two ensign pairs split up, and after that, not a single interaction between any of the three.
Well, they pass each other two more times. They're in the same room.
Yeah. They don't speak to each other.
Right. Again. They're involved in their own stories as right. They fly by each other.
Yeah. But yet there's themes between them that are the same. And obviously the backdrop of the sci-fi plot, which is that they're visiting with the ship, the USS Vancouver, to assist in the implosion of a moon has to be done in order for them to protect a planet from certain doom. And
it turns into a diplomatic mess. So they have the science on one side, which is, here's the thing we need to do to save people. And then all the people arguing about, well, that's going to hurt me and that's going to hurt me, and nobody liking the solution.
Well, so let's go a little bit out of order then, because there's an odd thing at the beginning of the episode where they go over to the USS Vancouver, and it's the captain and Ransom, and the captain's very pompous and it's like, oh, check out my ship. And it's exactly the same. The bridge is exactly right. The same. Which I guess was the joke, is that she's like, someday you could have something as cool as this. And it's totally the same. But they never really explain this, because it's a short show and it's a comedy. So sometimes you just have to kind of work it out in your head, I guess, what they're after. But I guess since this ship is all about engineering, the captain didn't want to deal with the locals. She just wanted to, the captain of the Vancouver just said to Freeman, you handle these people. They're crazy. I don't want to talk to them. Because we never saw her again. I mean, we saw her briefly, but we never talked to her again. And so she must have been off doing some engineering stuff or something, I guess. leaving Captain Freeman to take care of these very annoying or at least demanding purple aliens from Mixtus 3 and Mixtus 2.
Well, she stepped up. So she, first of all, we got to see some very good captaining from her, which was nice, because she's supposed to be this no-nonsense person, and we really got a sense of that in this episode as she's solving problems right and left. But the people she's dealing with are clearly meant to reflect, you know, the way Star Trek does what's going on in our culture now. Because everybody had these competing needs and was very indignant about what they wanted and didn't care what anybody else wanted. And it just felt like going through Twitter.
Right. Because there was the practical people who just, you know, were worried about the crops and the people who lived there. And there was the religious people. And then I think probably the one that's most making a comment was the one guy who thought it was all a conspiracy theory and that the planet was fine and they didn't need to implode the moon at all.
Right.
she had a solution for everyone but him, I guess, which I thought was good, is that she didn't, you know, she just kind of ignored him because he was an idiot.
She didn't waste her time on that guy.
But it's certainly true that Freeman has her mojo back in this episode, because we've seen her with some self-doubt in previous episodes. And she was on top of her game, doing good captaining wall to wall in this. And yet, you know, it was still funny. And Ransom was good backing her up. So that storyline of those two was solid. And she's kind of reminded me a lot of, I would say, Janeway. She was very Janeway in this episode. I don't know if you felt that way.
I didn't, but I don't disagree with you.
You know, just no nonsense and being, but yet still being diplomatic at the same time. You know, just, it just, felt very Janeway's. But I think Picard would have been more accommodating, more, you know, diplomatic, and, you know, Kirk probably would have, you know, might have punched one of those guys. So who knows?
And
so.
Then said, "Oh, diplomats." Yeah, Picard would have brought in some consultants and had different people talking to them. So I guess it was pretty Janeway-esque.
Yeah, she just got stuff done and moved on. But the heart of this episode is always, of course, focused on our two major characters, which is Brad and Mariner. And, you know, this time, even though they're paired together and they go over to the U.S. Vancouver and they kind of go back and forth between the ships, they have different agendas, as it were.
Well, so it's interesting. So, I mean, the whole, you know, it's like Brad finally has a girlfriend and Mariner's convinced that this girlfriend is some kind of trick or alien because of the way she seems to adore everything that he does. And so what struck me about that was the first time I watched it, I was a little bit annoyed because I don't love the trope of it's okay to directly tell men that they're not attractive or women don't like. We're talking about straight people, of course, in this scenario. But there's like a TV trope that I don't like, which is you can tell men they're unattractive. You can make jokes about how women don't want to be with them. And just as women don't want those jokes made about them, I don't know any men that would actually want people making jokes like that about them. And so I was sort of annoyed by this, except when I watched it again, I learned some key things, which is one, she, as a friend, loves him. Mariner loves him. She thinks he's great. And she has this trauma. It's really about her trauma of the last time she was with people she considered a perfect couple and things went terribly wrong. And when she talks about it, she looks haunted in the flashback they show. Right. So then I realized there was substance to it. It wasn't about her thinking nobody would like him because he's not sexy. It was just the too good to be true part of it, and that she felt protective. And it made me like the episode better.
And it explains a bit more about Mariner and her kind of standoffish, I'm too cool exterior, is that she's been through stuff. And I think she says that. She said it before, and I think she says it again.
She says it a lot.
I've seen things, I think she says.
Yeah.
And we get the flashback with her in her first contact uniform on the USS Kido, docked at DS9.
Yep.
Although strangely, they dock at DS9, they show a scene at a bar, but the bar seemed to be on the Kido, not Quark. So I guess they wanted to save a full DS9 visit for some other time.
Yeah. Would be a lot to get into.
Yeah, but she definitely loves Brad. But they were very clear that it's not that, you know, she just loves him as a friend or as a sister maybe. And I think that that's great. That was the real love story of this episode, even though it was all about Brad and his girlfriend. I feel like this was a romantic comedy in the loosest sense about these two friends.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think it took the second viewing to really home in on that. There was so much comedy that it was easy to just sit back and laugh at all of it and not necessarily see the heart in it. But there it was.
And I don't see it as Brad being unattractive physically. I thought it was more along the lines of he's just such a awkward nerd that he couldn't, you know, date someone as cool as... Because everyone on the Vancouver's cool. That's the kind of conceit here, is that the ship is full of people who are doing really cool things, or as they called it, epic things, right? They're traveling through time, and you know they're one of the hero ships. They're kind of like the Enterprise or Voyager. They're doing the cool stuff, and she's one of the cool people on the cool ship. So I didn't see it as he wasn't attractive enough, as he's just not cool enough. And Brad did get cooler because he had a special cool outfit made. and this is, I mean, I may be just, this may be a tangent of mine, but so he asks the computer, he says, analyze the coolest people in Earth history, right? And it occurred to me that that's one of the things, like, that when you ask a computer that, it should have had the same effect as, like, when Kirk was messing, you know, with Nomad, or when Geordi asked the Enterprise computer to make a opponent that could beat Data. It should have just ground the Cerritos computer, because how do you determine coolness, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they didn't show, basically they cut to him in the outfit, so for all we know, it took an hour and a half. We don't know.
That's true. That's so true.
But there were definitely some odd choices. And I like the touch of him saying, boy, size small.
Right. Proudly.
Yes.
Proudly. And although, yeah, it definitely was a red flag when Barb found it sexy as hell. That kind of weird, strange outfit that the computer cooked up for him.
Right. That only his behavior was unacceptable.
Exactly. Now, our other pair of ensigns that we love are Tendi and Brutherford, and they had a kind of a small plot of their own, but in a way they're still part of this theme. There's still a love story here, I feel, but it's not necessarily between them, where they are kind of in awe of the technology of the USS Vancouver, and they end up working on it, and they're using these new tools and stuff like that. But they kind of realize that maybe the Vancouver isn't as cool as it seems.
What was more, it's actually had a little bit of a Riker turning down command of other ships kind of vibe, because what looks good on the outside, which is being in command or being on the new ship with all the new technology, isn't always the thing that you want. And in their case, they like feeling needed. They have affection. They said for their friends, but I think also for their busted little ship. Like they like that it smells like things are burning, and that it needs them to fix it.
Yeah, it's their broken ship.
Yeah, and, just like it's Mariner's Brad. She says he's exactly mine. Yeah, same kind of.
So
thing.
So their love story is realizing how much they love their home, the USS Cerritos, which the characters on the Star Trek show, the ships have to have a character. And I feel like even though so much of this episode takes place on the Vancouver, which Mariner, it's funny because Mariner also points out, it's like, this is exactly like the Cerritos. And in a way it is essentially the Cerritos in a lot of ways, but with like cooler technology on board. So people like Rutherford and Tendi know, you know, the 527 ways it's very different and very much better, but it's essentially the same ship style, I guess you would say, but a different class technically.
Right. With newer stuff.
With newer stuff. Exactly. Better nacelles for the starship nerds, as it were. But they fall back in love with the Cerritos, and They also face another one of these super cool people on the Vancouver who has to reveal himself to be living under the... He wants off the ship because it's too much pressure being that cool all the time.
Right. Right. So he plans to sort of switch places with them. That's his plan.
Right. And they thwart that, obviously.
Right. And they keep up the funny thing that started on, I guess, Next Generation with the pads, which is that this pad has a unique thing on it and that you aren't transferring information around, because he needed the pad where he could authorize the transfer, and it had to be that specific one.
Yeah.
Which, maybe, you know, it was like last week it was handing out pads in the conference room or something, last week or the week before. Like, that it's just a funny... I like that they're keeping that up. And then the two of them go tumbling through the ship on and off as they're fighting over the T-88s, the new piece of equipment that they want. So they're tumbling down the hallway when Mariner's running through it, and then they tumble through, I guess, the mess when Brad walks in his cool outfit.
Right, and he orders the warm beer.
Yeah.
Or the hot beer.
Hot beer.
Oh, Brad. I'm sorry. He revealed his full name in this episode, right?
Yes. Bradward.
Brad? Yeah. Amazing. Because, of course, it is, right? Although, what I love about going back to Mariner is that at first she makes fun of it, but then she starts using it truly affectionately. So, you know, showing that she does care about him, you know, that he is her Bradward, as
yeah.
it were.
Yeah. No, all in all, I thought it had a great, I thought it had good heart, but also the jokes were fast and furious, which I loved. There were so many of them, a ton of references again that all seemed to work, and just hilarious, goofy little moments. I also think the show looks great. I mean, the way that they it's beautiful to look at. It's gorgeous animation, and they try and make it look as much like a live action show as they can in a lot of ways with the effects. And it pays off.
You know, people don't often talk about directing with animation, but, you know, the director in an animated show does exactly what a director in a live action show does, you know, where they frame the shots and they work on the pacing. And I really feel like in this episode, I agree with you that the pacing was really good and the way it amped up towards the end. And certainly, yeah, the shots on this show in general and in this episode really do mirror how things were done on The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
The way the camera pans, and they've really nailed down the look and feel of The Next Generation. So kudos to them.
Actually. Yeah.
For all of that. I mean, it's so light years ahead of Star Trek the Animated Series in every way.
Oh, please. Yeah.
To the technical, you know, prowess of everyone involved and Titmouse Animation. And I believe the USS Vancouver is named the Vancouver because of Titmouse, which has offices in Vancouver. And I think that's where the work on the show is done. And all of their shuttles, I don't know if you noticed this, were named after different neighborhoods in Vancouver.
I would also say, you know, and I can say this because I'm Canadian, which is that the Vancouver, you know, we're like you, but cleaner and newer and better. It's definitely had a nice Canadian vibe to it.
Right. And although you wouldn't say the captain was more polite, although she was polite on the surface, perhaps.
Yes. No, the captain wasn't more because she was arrogant.
Very condescending.
Yeah. But the ship itself, it was sort of it made me just think a little bit, you know, I'm Canadian and I do think I live in America and I love it, but we have our moments of our perceived superiority. So I thought there was little bits of that sprinkled in there for comedy.
So what was your favorite joke or gag in the episode?
I have two favorite lines, and they both made me laugh out loud. One is, that guy's like a Kirk Sunday with Trip Tucker sprinkles, which made me laugh very hard. And then I liked when Rutherford and Tendi are talking about the Vancouver, and they talk about the door whoosh, and then they both go whoosh because they love it.
They're so in sync, as it were.
What were yours? Did you have one?
Well, I liked the getting back to the what's life like for the people on the epic ship. And so when Barbara's just talking and she says, oh, I managed to reverse the polarity and reboot the time stream. Good thing, too. 1920 Chicago. Nobody's washing their hands. Yeah, it's just like offhand, like, oh, yeah, we were back in the, you know, the 20s. And I wondered if that was the same time travel, because the engineer mentioned that they had to travel back in time to kill the guy who was worse than Hitler.
Right.
And I'm wondering, you know, was that in 1920s, or how often are these guys traveling through time? But the offhand way is like, oh, you know, just another Tuesday for them.
Right.
And then there was a little thing of when Mariner's running through the ship and she's, you know, pushing people out of the way that are in her way. Then she passes this Andorian who's not in her way, But she just can't help herself, and she just pushes her. She just goes, Jennifer. So there's like a whole, so we know there's like a whole thing going on with her and Jennifer. It spoke volumes that these two don't like each other. But we don't know what the deal is, but we do know that Mariner decided, I'm already running and pushing people, and I'm gonna tag Jennifer because, you know.
Seize the moment.
She knows what she did.
Yeah.
Jennifer knows what she did. Jennifer the Andorian knows what she did. So I liked that.
I thought that was funny, and it reminded me of that scene in Airplane when he's running through the airport and first pushing people out of the way who get in his way and then just starts aggressively attacking people. Do you know the scene I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
In Airplane. Absolutely. Yeah. So it reminded me a little bit of that, like taking the opportunity to just push more people out of the way.
Now, when it comes to Star Trek references, and I know I've harped on this before, I was okay with them in this episode. Maybe they're wearing me down.
Ha! Yay!
I just felt like it worked. You know, her conspiracy board, and she was just rattling off all of these conspiracies. She had you know, Romulan spy, Salt Succubus, which is obviously, speaking of the man trap, the salt vampire.
The Dauphin, she mentioned her.
Yeah, which actually isn't, well, I need to, you know, someone will correct me on this. I don't think that's the name of the shapeshifter. I think the name of the shapeshifter is an Alice Morph. That was the name of the episode.
Yeah, that was her title, but.
But that was the girl's.
The girl's title as a leader. That was her title, but it wasn't her species or her name.
Yeah, but we're going to give him a pass on that one. Surgic Altered Cardassian, which is obviously Seska. Transporter Clone, which is Riker. You know, Asulaban. But there was also, like, if you looked on the board, there were things she didn't even get to mention. There was, like, a Zindi. There was the whales. There was the Binar. Data's child. You know, yes. I mean, like, the Bigfoot. If you look closely, there's Bigfoot.
Yeah, Bigfoot was there. Do you want to know what my favorite reference was that she said out loud?
What?
Sexy people in rompers that murder you just for going on the grass. Which was justice. But I was like, that's awesome.
And then Barb had her own theories about Mariner. Barb thought she was a rogue holodeck character, right? Which we've seen plenty of those, right? Or a Breen infiltrator.
Yep.
Without the helmet on. And then back to Parasite. So there's just so many. I mean, it's just, you know, with this episode with Shining Galena, that there have been so many of these kinds of characters that you could just, there's no end of them in Star Trek. You know, right. They all have their own list of them. But this, I just, you know, I felt it was good. Maybe the Trip Trucker sprinkles were a little, that was maybe, see, for me, what you love, that's me going, okay, enough. Enough, mate. How many times are you going to mention Kirk? Come on. We're five episodes in and they've mentioned him like five times or something. I know,
but both of those guys have been, you know, sex objects, and it's just funny to mention it like that. And that's
Trip
way,
is fine, but it's like, okay, you've got at least three Kirk mentions in five episodes. They've got to just, you know, I want to go three episodes without hearing Kirk's name. I love James T. Kirk. I love William Shatner, but. You know, are people really just throwing his name constantly 110 years later? I don't know.
I say yes, they are, because he's legendary. And I think that was a perfect use. Like, that line made me laugh out loud, and I feel like we're going to see it all over social media today.
But but that's the thing.
It was so funny. It was just witty and funny.
But the better references, I think, are the deeper cuts, like how she mentions that they're relocating the locals to the sixth moon, which will become the fifth moon, right?
That was
which
great.
Is referenced to SETI Alpha 5 and SETI Alpha 6. You know, so those are my favorite deep cuts because they're actually deep as opposed to saying Kirk, Kirk, Kirk. But, you know. And there was a little, I liked the You Maniacs on the knees, which is another Planet of the Apes, right? That's their second Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So they've obviously got some Apes fan. I know you're an Apes fan.
I am an Apes fan.
So.
Yeah, they had. I loved the pace of all the shout outs. I thought they were really funny. And then, like, remnant, like her friends, the ones who traumatized her are talking about Lore and is, you know, joining with the Borg, throwing that stuff out there.
Now, doing the math on that, well, it doesn't make sense because the way they talked about that, they said, did you hear about the Enterprise, right? But they're in First Contact universe uniforms, referring to an event that happened on the Enterprise, a different Enterprise, years before. So that was a little confusing.
Right. Yeah, didn't...
Maybe news just got out. But you know, that was, you know, the Enterprise had been destroyed at that point. News travels slow, I guess.
It takes a
maybe
while.
Maybe the U.S. Keto. Here's my thing. The U.S. Keto was out in deep space and just came back. Were issued their new uniforms, and they were just catching up on all the news for the last 5 years. How about that?
All right, I'll take it.
But it does show that Mariner's been around, because that was at least years ago. Right.
Yep. She had, you know, some, she had different hair, a whole different look.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Any other final thoughts you have about the episode? I could talk for hours about how I thought the narrative structure tied into William Shakespeare and Pulp Fiction and other, you know, Robert Altman films.
Yeah, as soon as you said, because I was reading your review, as soon as you said Robert Altman, I was like, oh, yeah, exactly. It was an interesting experimental choice. I love that they're doing different things, trying to tell stories in different ways. So the only other thing I'd add is that what I really like is that everyone just loves their jobs so much. Everyone's so excited to have their jobs. Even Barb is excited about hers. And I just think that's very Starfleet, this pride. It doesn't matter what your job is. Everybody's pretty proud of what they do.
Right. She dumps Brad, but it has absolutely nothing to him no longer having a parasite. It's because she wants to study the parasite.
Right. She leaves him for the parasite.
Yeah. Just ironic, of course. And
Captain and the parasite's, Freeman, wait, the parasite's going, lover, 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 over and over.
I think it says, I need to look at the closed caption. It said something about buying her dinner. I mean,
yeah, it likes her. But it also, because everyone hates when people say lover. He's my lover.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear that. And they say it so many times in this episode. It's like last week, moist vessel. So this week it's lover, lover, lover. The parasite was funny.
I was wondering if it was a reference to the brain slug from Futurama.
Yeah, it seemed very similar to me to the brain slug from Futurama.
Right. Although the brain slug turns people more zombified, but it's, you know, it's in the zone, as it were.
And sticks slug out of their heads, but was kind of the same, like the husk looked very familiar to me.
Yeah. The brain slugs never talked, right? I guess they talked through the people.
Right.
About how great it is to have a brain slug.
It's a really good episode.
I think, again, the show, we're halfway through, and we've seen a lot of different things from Lower Decks. I feel like the show's getting better in a lot of ways. And what's interesting is Mike McManus said he likes the second half better. So, you know, maybe these were just their training wheels that we're going to see even better stuff in the back half.
Cool. Yeah, I think so too. It's been a good journey so far. So I am eager to see what comes next. And that's what they'll be talking about on that panel too, as the second half of the season.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it for Cupid's Errant Arrow. So we like to end the show each week talking about some Trek bits. If either of us has something that caught their interest this week. I don't have anything new this week.
Lori, I got something. So this is I've never heard this before. This surprised me. I've been listening to Rob Lowe has a podcast called Literally with Rob Lowe, which is taken from his character on Parks and Rec. Chris Traeger, who always said, literally, I'm literally so excited I could burst. And he used to say things like that all the time. So he had Nick Offerman, who was also on Parks and Rec, on the show, and they were reminiscing together. And then Rob Lowe said, they were talking about the character of Dr. Richard Nygaard, who was never seen on screen in the show, but he was Chris Traeger's psychiatrist.
And we've heard about him a lot.
Yeah, he talked about him a lot, and he had a certificate from him that he'd requested that Rob Lowe said he still has. Anyway, he said that one of the things he always liked about doing the show was that Mike Shore, who co-created or created the show, would come in and throw casting ideas around for these extra roles. And he says there was a lot of talk about who should be Dr. Richard Nygaard. And Rob Lowe said the person they were trying to get was Leonard Nimoy.
God, that would have been so great.
It would have been so good. I wish they had done it. So that was just a fun thing. I've never heard that before anywhere. But I would have loved, I love that show, and it would have been really nice to have Leonard Nimoy on, and what a perfect role for him too.
Oh, it would have been.
Yeah.
And that show did have a few Star Trek references.
Oh yeah. Well, Ben on the show was a big fan and was referencing it a lot.
Yeah, obviously. And of course appeared in Star Trek First Contact.
Yep. Even though the actor is not actually a fan, Adam Scott, I don't think he's too excited about that.
Weird.
Huh? Yeah.
His loss.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, that's my little tidbit, and I will put up a link on our page to that episode of Rob Lowe's podcast, and also all the news stories and everything else that we've talked about today that seems link-worthy.
So thank you for joining us for the fifth full episode of All Access Star Trek.
Don't forget to go to the site for more news during the week. And also, please do us a favor and give us some feedback on the podcast. We'd like to know how we're doing, what you'd like more of, what you'd like less of. And of course, everything that you like, we especially want to hear about. Just
so we'll be back next Friday to talk about next week's episode, all the news from the Star Trek Day panels, and whatever else comes up over the next week.
Cool. See you next week.
Thanks for listening.